This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the normalization of relations between Ethiopia and Eritrea. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. This week, the first commercial flight in 20 years from Ethiopia to Eritrea landed in the Eritrean capital of Asmara, the latest sign of normalized ties between the longtime foes. The flight is the latest chapter in a new and fast-moving era of détente that began when Ethiopia's new reformist Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed announced in June that Addis Ababa would finally honor a deal signed in 2000 to end a two-year border war that killed an estimated 70,000 people. Earlier this month, Ahmed and Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki signed a historic peace deal that formally ended one of Africa's longest, most intractable conflicts. The two nations have since restored telephone lines, and Eritrea has opened its embassy in Addis Ababa. Eritrea was a former province of Ethiopia until breaking away and declaring its independence in 1993. Analysts say lasting peace could herald a new era in a strategic part of Africa near the Middle East. Ethiopia is a top Western and Chinese ally in the conflict-prone Horn of Africa, near one of the world's busiest shipping routes. Eritrea hosts a major UAE military base and has 1,000 kilometers of coastline near the Suez Canal. With us to discuss the routes and prospects for this historic breakthrough between Ethiopia and Eritrea are two distinguished U.S. diplomats with extensive experience in the Horn of Africa. Ambassador Herman, also known as Hank Cohen, is former Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs during the first Bush administration from 1989 to 1993. Ambassador Cohen is a 38-year veteran of the U.S. Foreign Service. He brokered an end to the Eritrean-Ethiopia War in 1991, as well as conflicts in Angola and Mozambique. And Ambassador David Shin, he's former ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso, currently professor of international affairs at the George Washington University's School of International Affairs. He blogs at the official blog of Ambassador David Shin. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Ambassadors, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, Ambassador Cohen, let me begin with you. What is your reaction to this rapprochement between Eritrea and Ethiopia?
Well, I think it's long overdue. Both countries were suffering from this Cold War. Eritrea used to have strong commercial relations with Ethiopia. They were selling a lot of manufactured goods. All of that was shut down. And Ethiopia used to use the ports of Eritrea as an outlet to the ocean. All of that was shut down. So it was costing Eritrea a lot of money. It was costing Ethiopia a lot of money. So it was very important that they end this Cold War that was hurting both of them.
What do you think are the main factors that led to this breakthrough?
I would say the internal situation in Ethiopia. As a result of the 1991 end of that war, the Eritrean War of Independence, there was one group that was left with armed power. That was the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front. They control the power of all of Ethiopia. And they have been running a very authoritarian regime. But they represent only about 10% of the Ethiopian population. So it was unsustainable. They couldn't continue to control all of the economic and political power against all of the other people. And the other people started to rebel. They started to have demonstrations. They started to destroy foreign property and that sort of thing. So the government of Ethiopia realized the time was up. It had to reform.
Ambassador David Shin, time up. What's your reaction to this rapprochement? And how did we get to this day?
I'm very optimistic also with what has happened so far. I think that the prospects are good for actually making this happen and coming to agreement on a whole series of outstanding issues. Yet there are challenges ahead, and no one should underestimate those. But if there's really goodwill on behalf of both Prime Minister Abiy in Ethiopia and President Isaias in Eritrea, I think it will be possible to get through this thicket of, in some cases, relatively small problems, and other cases, larger problems, and make this actually work so that you can have a true normalization of relations between the two countries.
back to you, Ambassador Cohen, talking about Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, to the extent his force of personality and change of regime made this day possible. Talk more about his role as a catalyst for this rapprochement.
Well, he's been a big surprise to a lot of us. He represented, within the governing coalition, he represented the Oromo region, the Oromo state, and we really didn't know much about him. And actually, we thought that he would be controlled. He would be part of a bigger Politburo. But actually, he's emerged as a very dynamic leader who's not afraid to take risks. And he's made all these decisions. You know, I know a lot of Ethiopians living in the United States in the diaspora, and they're crazy about him, no matter what tribe they come from. They think, here is our new leader. He's wonderful.
Interesting. I've, of course, come across many Ethiopians as well here in the Washington, D.C. area, and I get the same reaction. Ambassador Shin, talk about the role of this new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed. To what extent, you know, he is really the catalyst for this?
Prime Minister Abiy is clearly the catalyst. He does have support within the ruling party, the EPRDF, in Ethiopia. This could not have happened unless he had fairly significant support from other coalition party members. There are basically four large parties that form the EPRDF. This is clearly also something that has been under discussion for quite some period of time. Even before he became prime minister, there were other possibilities for new prime ministers replacing Haile Mariam. Abiy was a little bit of a surprise choice, quite frankly, and I think it has worked out so far very well. That does not mean that there is no opposition in Ethiopia to what is going on.
Talk a bit about the opposition that you just referred to.
Well, I think there are some, shall we say, more long-standing members of the EPRDF who are a little more wedded to the ways of the past, a little more suspicious about all of the change that is going on, not just the rapprochement between Ethiopia and Eritrea, but some of the economic changes that are going on. Perhaps a concern that some members of the EPRDF will lose their positions of power. And, you know, we shouldn't forget that there was a grenade attack in late June that was basically an attempt to assassinate Prime Minister Abiy, and fortunately it didn't affect him at all, but two people were killed and about 40 were injured. I think there is some concern that that kind of thing could happen again. In part, that's due to the fact that he has been so open with the Ethiopian public. He's out in huge rallies. Previous prime ministers have just not done that. So he does open himself to a certain amount of potential harm by being so close to the public.
Ambassador Cohen, are you concerned also about spoilers or rejectionists that could mar or somehow impede this progress?
There are powerful political leaders who have a vested interest in the status quo. They're making money. They own businesses which are protected by the government. They have monopolies, for example, in truck transport and all sorts of other economic activities. The government also owns a lot of companies. I'm involved in electric power. That's my main activity. And I've been to Ethiopia three times in the last 5 years trying to get private investments in power generation. And I've always been rebuffed at the political level because this is a monopoly of the government and people in politics are making money from that. So as Ambassador Shin said, we cannot dismiss the possibility that there will be a reaction from powerful people. So we're not out of the woods yet.
But at the level of the people, we know that both peoples in Eritrea and Ethiopia share deep ethnic and cultural ties. How are they reacting largely? Are they very optimistic and hopeful?
I think so. One thing to notice, the different ethnic groups have not always loved each other in Ethiopia. And when you see the two biggest population groups, the Amhara and the Oromos, get together, that's never happened before. And that is a major force for reforms, I think.
How do you see that, Ambassador Shin, in terms of the people?
I see it pretty much the same way. I was in Ethiopia last month and had a lot of contact with former friends and some people that I didn't know in the past. And by and large, the reaction was very positive to what Prime Minister Abiy was doing. This was before he had made the announcement about the rapprochement with Eritrea, but he'd made a lot of other statements, reformist kinds of statements and decisions. There were a few who urged a little caution and not moving too quickly. The feeling that there's a lot to digest here. And there is, you know, basically since 1991, a background of a different kind of governance in some cases, and making too much change too quickly might sort of test the limits of some people. That was the one concern I heard. But generally widespread positive reaction to what he is doing.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Ambassador Herman, also known as Hank Cohen, former Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, and Ambassador David Shin, from whom you just heard. He's former ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso. We're discussing the roots and ramifications of the normalization of relations between Ethiopia and Eritrea. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab at our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to Seble Ephraim, who listens to Encounter from London. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Back to you, Ambassador Cohen. So now, after all these years, Ethiopia is prepared to enforce the terms of the Algiers Agreement of 2000. They failed to implement this back in the day. Suddenly, they're ready for the implementation.
That's right. I think it's sincere, and I think it will happen. There are going to be problems on both sides, because when you go from Cold War to peace, it's not always a smooth thing. For example, in Eritrea, because there was no border agreement, they deployed thousands of troops on the border. And what the government was doing was drafting people into the army, young men, and keeping them indefinitely. It wasn't like in the United States when I was drafted, it was 2 years and you're out. Some of these young men have been there for 10, 15 years, and they're running away, crossing the border, going to Europe as refugees. So it's caused quite a lot of problems. So what is going to happen now? There'll be no need for these troops on the border. Will they find jobs for them? So there could be socioeconomic problems inside Eritrea. And so this whole peace deal will have its negative impact.
Turning to you, Ambassador David Shin, that leads us to talk about the Eritrean leader, Isaias Afwerki. He's a very reclusive, rather eccentric president all these years. Some consider him a dictator. Pessimists say he will not really be able to sustain his repressive regime. You know, now that if in fact all this goes forward, this rapprochement, and there's no need for this forced conscription of Eritreans, how do you see this? Do you think he's capable of reforming after all these years and basically opening up the country?
Well, this is, of course, one of the big challenges ahead, and I have seen some commentary by the Eritrean diaspora just in the last several days where they're questioning whether it's possible to do this and also whether it's possible to effectively end the military conscription or the national service conscription, which has been the reason why you have had so many young Eritreans leaving the country. There are about 160,000 Eritreans as registered refugees inside Ethiopia today, many of them young people who were trying to leave the national service. And it's critical that that not only come to an end, but it be reversed and that these people be encouraged to return to Eritrea. There's a lot that will have to be done internally inside Eritrea to ensure that this arrangement actually works to the long-term advantage of Eritrea. The challenges are on both sides, Ethiopia and Eritrea, and there's the issue of simply demarcating that border. No one's really talking about that yet, and it's not just Batame. There are all kinds of little villages along that border that the Ethiopian-Eritrean Boundary Commission urged that a new boundary be made back in 2002, and nothing, of course, has been done about it. This is going to be a real challenge, and it's essential to involve the local people in that discussion so you don't end up dividing villages in half arbitrarily, and that could happen.
Of course, it's important to involve the local people, but Ambassador Cohen, what about other brokers, international actors? Do you see a role for whether the United Nations again or other countries? I'm not sure whether, you know, Saudi Arabia or UAE who are close to Eritrea, what role they have played or could play in the future with respect to the brokering and normalizing of these relations?
Well, I think if there is going to be a need for brokering, I'm not sure there will be because these two countries have very mature leaders. But if there's a need, I can see UAE playing a role, even the United States, which is highly trusted by both sides. I think they could come back. Like Ambassador Shin, I'm kind of optimistic that they will be able to resolve their difference. My main concern, I think the reforms in Ethiopia will go ahead, and I think the prime minister is doing an excellent job. My main concern is trouble inside Eritrea, the difficulty of absorbing these people coming back from Ethiopia or from Europe, and also growing demands by the people of Eritrea for a less authoritarian regime.
Exactly. And so the same question, in a sense, to you. Can Isaias Afwerki accept and agree to this breakthrough and at the same time maintain his hold on power? Or are the two basically antithetical? And will he have to give up? And would he be willing to do so?
This is a big question. I've had lots of conversations with him. He used to come to the United States a lot when they were negotiating with the government of Ethiopia for their independence. And he is a great admirer of Mao Zedong in China. He trained in China during Mao Zedong, and he said, I like Mao because it was control. Keep control. Don't let anything get out of control. But, you know, more and more Eritreans are educated. They want to have self-determination. So he's going to be under great pressure. I would say this is going to be his greatest challenge from now on.
Again, Ambassador Shin, anything to add or subtract to the future of Isaias Afwerki? Is he able to shepherd this process and still maintain a hold on power? And if he did, he would have to change the way he governs because the people, as Ambassador Cohen said, are no longer going to tolerate this type of repressive regime. They're going to clamor for greater openness, more civil society groups, elections free and fair, and the end to this forced conscription.
I think those of us who have been following Horn of African affairs for decades, as both Ambassador Cohen and I have been doing, are basing this more on our hope that this will happen than any sort of guarantee that it will happen. If it doesn't happen, we could revert to a very difficult situation again. So far, the goodwill that has been shown by both leaders has been, in a sense, surprising. In fact, it's interesting when you go back to the initial offer of Prime Minister Abiy to reconcile with Eritrea. There was silence from Eritrea for more than a week, maybe close to 2 weeks. And I was in Ethiopia at the time, and everyone was wondering, well, why doesn't he say something? Why doesn't he respond? Well, fortunately, he did eventually, maybe as a result of encouragement from countries like Saudi Arabia and the UAE, I don't know. And the response has been very, very good. And I think we all just hope that that kind of response continues as he deals with his internal issues.
Turning back to you, Ambassador Cohen, what about the implications for the region at large? I mean, should this normalization go through in a positive way? That could mean a lot for the region and its stability.
Yes, I think so. Before I get to that, I wanted to mention one thing about Eritrea that's special. There is no corruption. The president himself is modest and is really unlike the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, who had the real power in Ethiopia. You saw what they call the Adwa crowd in Tigray, where the luxurious buildings and homes and buying real estate and that sort of, also sending money out of the country. So that's going to be a big problem for the future in Ethiopia, recuperating all of that stolen money. Eritrea, you have nothing like that. But his problems are going to be political and human. Large numbers of people finding jobs for people. Will they be able to loosen up and give the people a voice? For that, I will think he's going to go very slowly, if at all. He really, his instincts are, I must keep control.
Nonetheless, the region is certainly likely to benefit. Perhaps would Eritrea join IGAD, the East African Trading Bloc? And what impacts could this have, that is, normalization between Ethiopia and Eritrea on just the Horn of Africa in general, whether Somalia, Sudan, and so forth?
I think it'll be positive because you still have the terrorist threat in Somalia. You have the Al-Shabaab. And, of course, there were UN sanctions against Eritrea for their alleged help to Al-Shabaab. And I'm glad to see that Ethiopia has just put in a resolution in the Security Council, lift sanctions on Eritrea. And I hope the United States will co-sponsor that resolution. So now you have the combined forces of Ethiopia and Eritrea able to combat Shabaab, and that will be a very strong weapon against this very bad terrorist group.
So, Ambassador Shin, anything to add or subtract with respect to the UN sanctions on Eritrea, the extent to which they have now become sort of obsolete, and do you think the U.S. should co-sponsor a resolution eliminating those sanctions on Eritrea for its alleged assistance to al-Shabaab, one? And then secondly, what about the implications of this normalization for the fight against al-Shabaab and for stability in the region?
Well, I agree that the time has come for the U.S. to get on board and do away with the sanctions on Eritrea. Having said that, I think the evidence was strong going back 7 to 10 years ago that Eritrea was supporting groups in Somalia that were hostile to the interests of Ethiopia. But that ended probably 6, 7 years ago. So it's time to end that. As far as the impact upon the situation in Somalia, I doubt if it's going to have a significant impact one way or the other, since the Eritrean support for al-Shabaab ended some time ago anyway. What's going on in Somalia today doesn't really have much to do with Eritrea, so it will continue pretty much as it is. It may provide Ethiopia with a little more flexibility in terms of how they handle security issues, but I don't think it's going to have a significant impact on Somalia. Where the real change will come is economically. And that will be a positive for both Ethiopia and Eritrea. Ethiopia has had one of the highest GDP growth rates of any country in Africa for the last 10 years, in spite of the fact that it's a landlocked country. Eritrea has not, and it may be a bigger benefit for Eritrea than for Ethiopia.
Ambassador Cohen, I'd like you to weigh in on those economic benefits as well, now that Ethiopia would have, presumably, you know, its access to the sea again, based on the rapprochement with Eritrea. It should be able to have access to the ports in Eritrea.
Well, at the end of the war in 1991, when Eritrea won its independence, I had a private meeting with Esaias and Meles Zenawi, the late prime minister, and I said, I'm sure that Eritrea is going to vote for independence. There's no doubt about that. But you must have an economic common market. There should be no border when it comes to commerce, because it'll be to the benefit of both. And since then, you've had a major road construction from the port of Massawa to the Ethiopian border, and that is very good for northern Ethiopia, when they could open that and start using it. Secondly, Ethiopia had its own customs facility in the port of Assab, and this was to the benefit of both. Ethiopia could handle its customs directly without going through Eritrea, and at the same time, Eritrea was making money from that. And now Eritrea can resume exports to Ethiopia because, you know, they were an Italian colony for 50 years, and they developed some manufacturing capabilities, so they could resume becoming a major supplier to Ethiopia.
And any final thoughts about the challenges ahead as the euphoria of these new links, communication, air links, and the peace agreement, as that fades and concrete challenges of moving forward, how do you see those challenges?
Well, I think in Ethiopia, it's delicate. There are people with vested interest in the status quo, and they're going to resist, I think. So the prime minister can't become euphoric. He has to keep his mind on the situation and move ahead, but with support from as many different groups as possible. In Eritrea, I have a message from my friend Isaias Afwerki. Sir, please start thinking about having a more flexible political system. Trust the Eritrean people. They love you, and I think they will help you do even better than you have since you took power.
The last word to you, Ambassador Shin, about the challenges ahead.
I would focus also on sitting down at a fairly early state and trying to sort out where the border goes, even if there's an agreement to have a common customs union or some sort of commonality in trade. You still have to have a border that's agreed upon so you don't fall back into this problem again 10, 20 years from now. And this means involving the local people who are affected on the ground. And the ultimate agreement is going to depend upon the goodwill of Ethiopian leaders and Eritrean leaders, not necessarily the precise boundary that was suggested by the Ethiopian-Eritrean boundary commission by commissioners who never even visited the border.
Well, on that cautiously optimistic note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Ambassador Hank Cohen, former Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, and Ambassador David Shin, former Ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso. Thank you, gentlemen, for your valuable insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Jonah Cummings. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.